Today's episode of Robin's Podcast is sponsored by TrueCar. When you're looking to buy a car, you want to make sure you're getting real pricing on actual inventory. Unfortunately, a lot of times that's not the case. People go online looking for cars. Maybe they're looking for a Toyota 8.6 like Kevin Martin has, and they're trying to find out what the price is. They think they've got it figured out, but then they go to the dealership and they find out that car or that price is not available. Not with TrueCar. You get real pricing on the actual inventory and not just pricing offered by TrueCar. That's the price from the actual dealer, and not just any dealer, a TrueCar certified dealer, a carefully curated network of dealers committed to transparency and offering you a competitive market price. With TrueCar, you'll easily find the car that you want, and then TrueCar will show you what other people in your area paid for the same car you're looking for, and then you'll know what a fair price is so you can feel confident. There's over 13,000 TrueCar certified dealers nationwide. TrueCar users are more likely to enjoy a faster buying process when they connect with a TrueCar certified dealer, and best of all, TrueCar users save an average of over $3,000 off MSRP. So when you're ready to buy, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino setting up what is going to be an interview here with Kevin Martin, the winner of Big Brother Canada. But first, we've got some breaking news from the world of Big Brother.
Breaking news are happening now.
I've got Taryn Armstrong and Alex Kidwell here with me to discuss. We have a new twist announced for Big Brother 19, and I wanted to talk about that real quick, and then we'll get to our interview with Kevin. But gentlemen, hello. How's it going?
It's going good.
It's good. Okay. All right. Can I tempt you with an offer to tell you about the new twist happening in Big Brother 19?
You may.
So tempted.
Okay. We have just gotten an announcement Wednesday morning that Big Brother 19 is going to be the summer of temptation. Summer of temptation.
Oh, man.
Taryn, are you nervous?
I'm so nervous. Are you kidding? they didn't release like any details about like what these things will be. They're just like, yeah, we're going to introduce some things. Like, what things?
Yeah.
What's this going to be? I like the concept that, like, okay, they're going to introduce these, like, you can choose one way or the other. I like the fact that they're like, oh, we might set up a competition, then never even play it. I like that idea, but I'm definitely scared about what these things could be that they're talking about.
Temptation, all I never wanted.
Alex, we have seen pictures of the house, and there are very much temptation themes baked in. Lots of apples and snakes and money all around the house. So really setting the tone here. But the major wrinkle here is going to be a new twist called the Den of Temptation. No, not the Dan of Temptation, Taryn. The Den of Temptation, which will be played on Sunday nights, Alex. And here's how it's going to go down. That America will vote people into the Den of Temptation. And then Big Brother will try to tempt them with things. But every temptation comes with a price.
Mm. Yes, as they often do. The Den of Temptation sounds suspiciously like Pandora's Box, but I'm rolling with it.
Yeah. I mean, why not call it the Pandora's Box season? Just because that's not enough hype?
Because no one remembers that.
I feel like the Pandora's Box got ruined after season 13. Like, they never could really go back to it in a meaningful way. So they're like, oh, let's abandon that idea and just move forward.
Okay. They say that temptation has always been a part of Big Brother, but this summer we were testing the house guests like never before. There's so many different paths the game could take this season depending on what the house guests choose to do. With so many unknowns, we're excited to see how it all plays out. Do you suspect, though, we will have a pact in the house of nobody take the temptation, turn it down, whatever it is. If anybody takes it, they're going to be out next week.
I'm hearing, I think
I am too.
Audio from Kevin.
I don't hear it.
I'm hearing like Peely talking.
Yeah, that's what it is. I was trying to figure out what it was. Kevin is still on the feed.
I hear
on the Zencaster.
Okay. I don't hear anything back from Zencaster, but I can stop this and set up a new Zencaster.
Okay. Here, we'll close this. Close the Zencastr tab. I don't hear it. Okay. All right. So can you guys click on that Zencastr, that new Zencastr link in the chat? Okay. Taryn, do you think that we're just going to end up with a pact of all the house guests saying, like, hey, if anybody takes the temptation, you're going to be the next one out the door?
Probably not. I think that I don't know, because we don't know how it's set up, but it seems like the way that it's set up, it seems as though there's going to be a lot of these happening, and some of them will be like an all house decision. Maybe there'll be a vote on like, what do we want to do, this or this? Maybe some of, and I certainly, this idea of like the Den of Temptation, maybe it's anonymous. Maybe the person that gets voted to go to the Den of Temptation is, you know, a private thing, like the Roadkill was sort of a private thing, and they get to make a decision, and it's not revealed that it was them that made the decision. So I definitely think that this is probably something that they've thought ahead about, and that they're not going to make. They're going to have plenty of opportunity to have these decisions impact the game.
You know, for me, the thing that comes to mind the most is going to be the takeover twist from Big Brother 17, merely in the sense that this is the kind of ambiguous twist that allows them to switch it up, throw the curveball as needed. I mean, there's not preset rules on this thing as far as we know. So unless we get some really clear metrics established on the premiere night, the 2-hour premiere, which we may, it seems like this may be the kind of twist that allows them to, you know, do what they want to do to keep the season flowing in a, you know, respectable manner. It sounds like from the interviews with, you know, Rich Meehan and Alison Grodner that this is going to allow for, you know, competitions on Sundays, but not necessarily force the Sunday competition. And that was something we had talked about, that they want a third competition for the Sunday show. So, yeah, I'm really curious to see how overarching this twist is, how much of an imprint it has on the season as a whole.
How do we feel about America voting for this, Taryn? I know we've had issues in the past with different things Big Brother has done in terms of putting it on the shoulders of America with the care packages last season. Do you think that this is potentially too much power for America, or this is the right amount of engagement that we want?
Oh, I mean, I think it's always too much power. But here's the thing. I'm guessing this is reminds me a lot of the whole care package idea, right? Because every week is going to be something new. And I'm guessing that they really enjoyed the care package angle from Big Brother OTT even more so than from Big Brother 18, because every week was something different. And maybe that was, I mean, I don't like twists. I don't like America voted twists, but there was something a little bit fun about the fact that every week there was something new to kind of like wrap your head around. I don't think that's great for new Big Brother watchers. Like, we just did this podcast trying to introduce people to Big Brother, and people are like, it's confusing as it is. We don't need something new every single week. But I can kind of get on board with this idea, as long as it's the same sort of rules, where it's like you can only go to the Den of Temptation once, and then you have to vote on somebody else. And then I feel like as long as that's the only area where America has power, then it's doable. It's not the worst thing in the world.
My hope is that, as you know, as they alluded to in the interview that they did, that this is going to be very much a choice. It's not going to be, oh, I go to the Den of Temptation and it's a great opportunity. I would hope that you go to the Den of Temptation and it really does present some kind of dilemma within the game. Like, maybe I do a great advantage, but it comes at a significant price. I really hope that there's that extra layer of thought to it. And if so, then that I'm much more bullish on the possibility here.
If this is actually balanced, like in the way that twists should be balanced, but they never really are. But if it actually is balanced, where you get a power, but you also get a disadvantage, and maybe you don't have to tell somebody about it, but like if they actually are able to like construct it correctly, this could be really, really fun. I just don't have a lot of faith that they're able to do
that. Could it be a tempting offer like this?
Would you rather fight a giant mosquito one time to get your ass whipped by it? Or do you like the relationship that you have and never get bit again? Or do you like the relationship that you have with mosquitoes right now?
Oh, what's my take? What's my take? Yeah, this was the tease. That was the tease for all that.
Yeah, we thought it was just a silly question Jeff had made up. No. This mosquito is waiting in the back room
to fight
and
somebody.
They're preparing him for a den of temptation to come.
Okay. All right. So we are going to throw it to our interview from earlier today with that Kevin Robert Martin. So hope you enjoyed that. Before we get to that, we got a quick promo for another show you can hear on our podcast network home, Podcast One, and then enjoy our interview with Kevin Martin.
Hey everyone, it's Caitlin Bristow. You can listen to my show, Off the Vine, with Caitlin Bristow every Tuesday on Podcast One. Hear me take on taboo topics and unfiltered advice. I'll also be dishing with some amazing celebrities. Oh, and did I mention there'll be wine? So grab a glass and join me every Tuesday on PodcastOne.com, the new Podcast One app, or subscribe on Apple Podcasts.
Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cisterna here with a special edition of Rob Has a Podcast, and we are live here on a Wednesday afternoon to talk to a guy that it's been, what, over a month now since he walked off the Odyssey as the winner of Big Brother Canada 5. Welcome back to the podcast, our great friend Kevin Martin. That Kevin Martin, yes. Kevin, how are you?
Thanks, Rob. I'm good. Yeah, just over a month ago. I think it was 33, 34 days since that Odyssey landed and I got off there. So it's been a crazy ride, but I'm excited to break some of the stuff down, the good and the bad of what happened in Big Brother Canada Season 5. Because it was, we won the thing, we won the whole thing, but it wasn't the smoothest ride that we've ever seen.
Not the
from
smoothest.
A Big Brother winner. So I'm excited to break it down.
Yes. Okay. All right. And here back with us for the second night in a row. We talked with them last night on part two of our Big Brother 19 season preview. First is a man who is wearing a poker shirt for Kevin in his honor. Here's Alex Kidwell. Alex, how are you?
I'm good, Rob. Yeah, I didn't bring that many t-shirts with me when I moved out to LA, but this is one of them. I figured, you know, it was appropriate. It was the right shirt to put on. And I did a little research beforehand because I'm not a big hockey guy. I had to double check this, but the Calgary Flames have not won anything in a long, long time. So I think by default, Kevin Martin, the fighting pride of Calgary at this point.
Pride of Calgary. How about that?
I like that. Yeah.
Okay.
It's first time the Big Brother Canada title has ever gone to the west coast of Canada. I don't know if you guys know Canadian geography.
Oh, huge.
The East has won it every time. So finally the title is out in the west coast.
It's a big deal.
Okay. Yeah. Representing the Western Conference of Canada. All right, and then here with us a man who is still west of where he normally is, Taryn Armstrong, live in Vegas.
Yeah, Alex may have brought a poker shirt to this podcast, but I traveled all the way to Vegas in honor of Kevin Martin, so I think I haven't beat.
He brought the Vegas to Kevin.
Yeah.
So there you go. All right, so excited to talk with Kevin. We got a lot of questions from our patron group and also on Twitter this morning, and then we're going to take your questions as well. Hashtag RHAP if you want to weigh in on anything we're going to talk about with Kevin here today. Of course, we're just but 1 week away from the Big Brother 19 premiere, so lots of excitement going on there. If you want to get your hands on some live feeds in anticipation, robhasawebsite.com/livefeeds. Is the link for that. Kevin, tell us, how have things been since you came down from the Odyssey?
Oh, it's been awesome. Yeah, the love's been overwhelming. It's been interesting now because season 6 isn't coming back next year. So at the same time, like, I won the show and then there's this uproar of fans being like, no, the show has to come back. So the Big Brother Canada community is still kind of in uproars over the hiatus. But I mean, it's been awesome. Family was wonderful. As soon as I landed, I went to Mexico for 7 days and just sat on a beach. And to sit on a beach and drink a beer and not care about who's winning HOH, not care about who's playing in the veto competition, and just to sit there and relax after 3 months and decompress. Because I mean, the Big Brother is such a psychologically... The game really does beat you down, and being in there for 69 days. So it's been awesome, and I'm excited to be back in the real world.
Now, Kevin, talk to me about the hiatus a little bit, because, of course, we all know that Big Brother Canada, it was terrible news, went on hiatus, and we don't know what the future is for Big Brother Canada. But for you, do you kind of want to be the last winner? Is that wanted the show to say, like, okay, we've go out on a high note, that's it.
So yeah, I have the belt until the next season comes back, I guess. So I mean, I want it to come back. I would like to see another season for sure, but yeah, I mean, I don't want to retire the champion. I'd love to pass it on to another Canadian somewhere.
Have you gotten any updates on your end about anything going on with the efforts to see Big Brother Canada get a renewal?
A little bit. Like, obviously, the fan out, people went nuts. And thank you to your petition that you signed. It had, like, what, a ton of people signing and stuff. There's kind of a general optimism. I haven't got any specific details at all. So, quietly optimistic.
Quietly optimistic. Okay. Well, thank you for bringing up the petition. If you are a listener that would like to sign the petition to use the power of veto, whether it's a secret power of veto at this point, I'll leave that for you guys to decide. But you can go ahead and reach that. Go to tinyurl.com/savebbcan. One of the many efforts going on right now to try to help see Big Brother Canada end up coming back into the game and coming back for another season. All right. So, Kevin, did you get a chance to watch any of Big Brother Canada 5 yet?
Very selfishly, I went and saw clips that were like kind of like my highlights. I haven't seen any of the episodes, but I went and watched like the triple eviction veto win, and then I went and watched the final five HOH win. And then basically, anytime I won a competition, I just went and watched it. And then so I just like kind of saw the good parts from my point of view. I haven't seen anything else though, so hopefully don't have too much revisionist history. And what I can say is actually what I saw from the first person's perspective. I have gone on the forums and I've seen people's take on it, but I truly want to give you guys the fresh take of what I thought was going on in that house from the first person perspective.
Do you have any desire to go back and watch it? Did you enjoy that the first time through?
I mean, in season 3, I think I got a really good edit. I was kind of a super like popular character in season 3 at the time when I went out, and it was really kind of fun to watch because they painted me in such an amazing light. I don't know what happened. I don't know, you know, kind of what edit or how I was perceived this time. But no, I have no desire to go back for a while. We won. Let's just sit on it. And I mean, maybe when I'm in a couple of years, but I have no immediate desire.
What have you found is the biggest misconception that people have about your game in talking with people and reading things online?
I mean, the final five decision is probably a massive decision where I win the final five HOH and I win the final five veto. I take Ika off the block. Dylan goes up. Dylan goes home. On paper, it looks like a disaster and people just lost their mind. But from my point of view, there was a lot of
you have no
situations.
Idea, Kevin.
What's that? My God.
Yeah, and Taryn and I were actually in the crowd for Dylan's eviction. That was when we were in Toronto our show. So we were there. We were right there.
Yeah.
Very close, so far away.
That decision, whether you want to label it as a mistake based on the information that was in the house at the time. But people aren't – it's interesting. They say we're breaking up Ike and Dimitri. The fact that the social relationships in the house didn't matter at that point. I had to win the final four veto. I needed to play against the weakest competitors in that final four veto competition. Obviously, the perfect lineup was – anyway, we can go to that decision more as we break through the game. But, yeah. Oh, hey, Peely. Say hi. Oh, you can't hear him. Yeah, with the headphones.
Okay. She waved. She waved for people that are listening to the audio version. Okay. Kevin, just let's just go back to the beginning real quick. And just could you tell us a little bit about when you found out that there was going to be an all-star version of Big Brother and whether there was any hesitation on your part to go back and do this?
For sure. So the first time when you get cast on Big Brother Canada, the casting process is like six, seven months. It's very long. It's almost part of the game. This time, they phoned me about 2.5 weeks before the show started. I think it was 15, 16 days. And they said, do you have any general interest? And I said, yes. I thought about it for one day. I was at a really good spot in my life with my poker career. Mentally, physically, I was in like a really good moment. So I did have to think about it. But within 20 minutes, I was like, of course I have to go play again. I mean, the way I went out in season 3, the triple eviction and it never sat with me quite correctly, and I had a second shot at redemption. I had to go back, whether I was going to fail or succeed. It's like I had to go try again. So I took about 20 minutes and said yes, and then immediately I put my life on stop, and I had 15 days to prepare before I was taken away for sequester. So not much time at all. But I did try to prepare as much as possible in those last 15 days. So if you followed my Twitch, I mean, the rumor, people in the community basically knew I was going back because I was putting out a YouTube video every day with my poker content. I was Twitch streaming all the time. And then all of a sudden I hard stopped it and I didn't really have a reason. I think I tweeted about going to visit my family somewhere or something. And everyone just cried wolf and they're like, this kid's on Big Brother Canada 5. I tried to downplay it as much as possible. I was super worried that, you know, that would hurt my chances to get on, but thankfully it didn't. And then, yeah, we went and played 9 days of Sequester and then they put me in the house.
So was there a lot of chatter of people like blowing up your phone to want to talk to you in the pregame, whether or not they were actually even on this season?
Yeah, the old trip to grandma's house, eh? Fool me once.
There was the only two people I really had suspicion of going back was Cindy and Netta. Besides that, the other people kept it pretty clean. And I mean, there was really no phone calls at all. But it was just suspicion based on social media activity and stuff. I did my research. Everyone else was like a complete surprise to me. So no, people, at least to me, I didn't get a lot of people reaching out at all.
So not even Bruno, who you went in and...
No, I had no idea. That's one of the craziest things. Because Bruno and I were not even really close. We didn't get along in season 3. We texted each other once in a while, played video games one time, but I wouldn't say that we were like close friends at all. No, he kept it on the down low. And yeah, didn't know about Bruno at all.
And when you finally got into the house, were you surprised that it was only a half All-Stars?
Well, that's the first time they've ever done that format, right? We've seen like four returning players. We've never seen half and half. I was pretty shocked. I thought maybe four returning players, but yeah, or maybe full All-Stars. But half and half was definitely a surprise. But I was really excited because in the history on Survivor and Big Brother, returning players have always had the edge. As we saw in season 5, I mean, we kind of were a hot mess as we went after each other and stuff. But I thought the fact that there was 8 returning players and 8 new players really benefited me and gave me an edge in the game. Because returning players in that half and half mix on Survivor and Big Brother have always kind of found the victory with the Cochrane and you know, so yeah.
So in terms of the early stages of the game, there was a lot of the vets going after the vets. And of course, you know, the first week was, you know, Mark versus Dimitris, and nobody had any idea that Dimitris was going to be such a big part of the season. But from that point on, it was a lot of the returning players targeting the returning players, which we've never really seen happen before. Could you just talk through what was going through your mind at that point?
Yeah, it was a complete disaster, right? So I walk in day one, and I'm super happy because we have 8 returning players, 8 new players. Basically, in Big Brother, that's almost like a pre-made alliance because we have met each other in the outside world. We have communicated whether we're best friends or not. I'd never talked to Cassandra. I'd never talked to Gary. There's a lot of people I had never talked with. But just the fact that we were bonded, that this is our second time, I was like, this is a pre-made alliance. We can band together. We have experience. We can make sure that one of us can win this game. Then Karen wins HOH on day one. My worst fear.
That's right, Kevin. Deal with it.
It was my worst. So we walk out there day one for the HOH, and it's an endurance challenge. And immediately I'm terrified because I can't really compete. And in endurance challenges, it's like I'm terrible. So a female new player wins. And this is the worst case situation because I know that 2 vets are definitely on the chopping block. And if they're going to take a shot at 2 vets, why not take a shot at Kevin and Bruno? These are 2 guys who played on the same season, and people paired us together immediately.
Time to go big buck hunting.
So, I mean, credit to Netta, Aika, and Cindy that first week, the first couple days, they really befriended Karen and made sure that the nominations fell on the new player's side. So a new player wins HOH and 2 new players are on the block. Like, it's an amazing situation for the veterans. At this point, we should really run over this game. And then it just fell apart after day 6, 7, 8, kind of in there.
Yo, what was it like? I mean, when you're trying to micromanage Netta and Aika, and that relationship's just clearly slipping through everyone's fingers because they just can't seem to get on the same page ever.
Oh yeah, I never tried to micromanage any relationships because I knew out of all the personalities in there, if you rated from the most explosive to the least explosive, I was either the bottom or near the bottom in terms of just a chill. I'm a very mellow person and a very passive person, and that kind of hurt me in certain moments in the game. But oh my god, yeah, I. It, I forget exactly what day it was, but there was this big battle between Netta's people and Ika's people, and it was brewing a couple weeks into the game. And on Netta's side was me and Bruno, and then on Ika's side was Dre, William, and it was just this huge battle, and it blew up during the double eviction. I didn't think it would blow up that soon, but, I mean, it made for some epic television, right?
Yeah, Jordan,
yeah, it certainly did.
Jordan was talking to me about that, like, when he was talking to you preseason, he was saying that you were really working on trying to figure out how to, like, maintain close, genuine relationships with people, because that's something that you kind of struggled with on Big Brother Canada 3. What kind of, like, preparation work did you put in to try to make sure you were going to do okay with that, and, like, how did you think you were doing in the early season?
I mean, my social game was all my weakest thing in season three, and in season five it was also when I form bonds, I have a close inner circle in my real life, and same in the Big Brother house. When I phone Bruno and Ned, we were so close in that house, but when you get to the outer circle, I just struggled for some reason. My preparation in the pregame, I read a couple self-help books about I forget what the title was. It's a popular one. Like, I think Cass read it. Remember on Survivor?
How to Win,
like,
Friends and Influence People?
Yes. Yeah. I read the first half of that in Sequester. How to Win Friends and Influence People. I took a page from KF Cass. Jordan actually gave me that book pregame. Jordan was like a really good help. I know you're not supposed to tell anyone that you're going back to Big Brother, but I definitely told Jordan, and he helped me with a lot of prep.
Yeah.
So I read that book and hopefully learned some social skills. And I mean, it kind of worked. Like, people, like, I kind of skated by the first half of the game in a lot of situations. It was really crazy. Netta was almost, I talked about meat shields going into this season. If there's no targets ahead of you in Survivor and Big Brother, then, like, you're kind of doing something wrong, I thought. And in a weird way, I always pictured, like, a Mark or Dimitri being my meat shield, but Netta was my meat shield. For some reason, people viewed Netta as the leader, which she definitely was. She did most of the strategical talking. I still think she's a really great player, even though the season didn't work out for her. So I knew that Netta was targeted ahead of Bruno and myself, which is, like, Bruno and I should be the targets in terms of physical and mental ability in competitions. Like, you got to take a shot at Kevin and Bruno, in my opinion, but they kept going after Netta. So when Netta left on the double eviction, it was pretty devastating for my game, because me and Bruno were next in line.
Yeah, before we get to that double eviction, one thing that, you know, I think it was a really big factor in the season as a whole in Netta's game, but it was so early that people kind of forget about it, that whole – the time warp twist.
Yeah.
And the fact that Netta got like 21% of the vote and you were second with 17. Like, how do you think that impacted Netta's game? Like, do you think that hurt her? And how do you think it would have factored in if you had been the one that actually won that?
Yeah, so that was day six. Me and Bruno tried to flip the Mark vote, and Bruno and I were on the wrong side of the vote. We tried to save Mark. We fell one vote short, which was just you guys didn't get live feeds that first weekend. Goddamn, like, it was just the most insane. I talked more game in the first 6 days of Big Brother Canada than I did all of season three. It was unbelievable how crazy that first week was. So I didn't think I would get that high, but thank you to everyone who was supporting me. You can debate whether the immunity curse is a good thing, like a plus EV thing for your game. Does getting immunity for the pre-jury increase your chance to win the game, or does it hurt your chance? That's a debate. I mean, in this case, it didn't work with Netta, but I actually think it might still be a positive thing. I don't want to be results orientated. I mean, I would have loved the immunity to get to jury and just sat back. Credit to Netta. She won two competitions while immune. I don't know if that was the best strategical decision. She definitely could have laid more low-informed personal relationships. But Netta just plays as Big Brother at 100%. She I think, played too hard while she was immune. You know, mm-hmm. She's targeting Cash. She's calling people out. She's making fun at speeches. With immunity, like, that's going to rub people the wrong way.
Were you thinking that during the time it was happening, or sort of like upon reflection that, yeah, she probably was doing that too hard? Because we were talking about it as the show was going on, that it seemed like that things were trending in a bad direction for her.
Yeah. I mean, a little bit, obviously in reflection, you can see that it climaxed to a disaster. But while it was going on, I definitely saw that it was rubbing Ika, Cassandra, Gary the wrong way. But I was actually kind of a fan of it, because I really tried to point Netta as my leader, and her being that meat shield ahead of me, I liked that the attention was on her and not myself and Bruno.
Something that I think I really want to know, especially from the early season, was do you know what happened with Karen? Like, why did she hate you the entire season?
The first week, I think, so Karen was HOH on, and it was, Karen was a hilarious HOA. She, I mean, credit to her. She's great television. Getting to the final four or final three kind of bonds people. Karen and I are good terms now anyway. But she's kind of a cool lady. But it took me a while to find that out. So the first week, Karen grabbed me and she looked me in the eye and said, "Swear to me that you're voting out Mark." She wanted Dimitri to stay really badly. She just looked me in the eyes and said, "Swear to me." And pinned up in a corner in the bathroom, I said, "Okay, Karen, I swear to you." And then me and Drew and Bruno tried to flip the vote. So going against her HOH, Karen blacklisted me. She was like, "This kid can never be trusted." And when you go against Karen and Big Brother, Karen puts you on the blacklist pretty harshly. But it was just that. And then multiply it with just a personality conflict. We didn't have anything in common. And it was just, I became a monster in her head. And the Karen Kevin storyline, I haven't seen the show still, but I want to see how it's portrayed on television because it was bad in there. But also for strategic reasons, I didn't think it was that bad. Having a name target in Big Brother can kind of put other people's mind at ease. So if I'm going to have an enemy in the house, I was really glad it was Karen because her chances of winning an HOH are on the low side. So, I mean, I definitely kind of never could fix that bond with Karen ever.
So, I want to know a little bit more about, did you try to ever really go out of your way to fix the issues with Karen in terms of trying to just sort of smooth things over, or you were just fine, you weren't too concerned with her?
I did it one time. I think it was day 12 or day 13. I grabbed her and said, "Karen, we have to fix something. We have to fix something." We had like a 15-minute chat. But within that conversation, she got the message that I was going after her, and that was like totally not the way I wanted the conversation to go. So I had this 15-minute conversation of like, "Karen, we need to work on a relationship. Let's spend time together. Let's be honest with each other. We don't have to go after each other in this game." But apparently a couple of my sentences, she thought I was trying to intimidate her. So that I tried to fix it, and it got even worse. And at that point, well, like, if I'm going to have a name target in this house, let it be Karen. Because the Karen, everyone was aware of the Karen and Kevin dynamic, and it definitely put people's brain at ease knowing that if I did win a challenge, I was going to go after Karen. If I did win an HOH in those early weeks, I was never, ever going to go after Karen, but I definitely wanted people to think that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think something that I think bonds a lot of like real big fans of these kinds of shows is that generally, at least from my perspective, tend to be very logical people. And I think, you know, I would really, at least me personally, I would really like to know, like, how do you cope with what, at least on the surface, seems like irrational, illogical play from the people around you in a game like this? Like, when you can objectively seemingly see that someone's not making a decision that's going to help them win money, like, how do you not let that consume you and keep you from, like, how do you keep your head in the game when that's going on around you?
And the biggest instance of that at the final five, it was 4-1. You know, it was D'Amica, Karen, and Dylan. They all wanted me out so badly. It was 4-1. Not only was it 4-1, people in the four were willing to sacrifice their own game and make bad decisions to get me out. Like, the vengeance from Karen was so real. It was crazy. So yeah, Karen admitted multiple times that she was making bad game moves just to spite me and try to get me out. So it's tough. It's like when you play a poker tournament, you assume everyone's trying to make as much money as they can. And when you play Big Brother, I assume the same thing. But people are there for other objectives, whether to make good television and stuff. So yeah, to try to play a game in a system where people aren't going to make logical decisions or even try to make logical decisions, that's what made it really, really tough.
So I want to discuss a little bit about the relationship you fostered in the house with William, which ultimately ends up saving your game completely at the point where he ends up with those two vetoes, takes you down off the block. And that's really the turning point for you where you never end up looking back. So how early on were you looking at him as somebody who was going to potentially play that role for you in the game?
I think it was just after the first week. I mean, we kind of always got along the first week and a half, but I was pretty aware of that the house was pretty divided in that it was like Netta, Bruno, myself, Dylan, Emily. We had that blue room, right? And I needed another friend on the other side of the house for information and, you know, just a friend on that side. And I chose it to be William. We just had a connection. We had fun flirting with each other all the time. And yeah, we really enjoyed each other's presence. And a lot in Big Brother, I feel like it comes down to who you can have fun with and just enjoy on a human level. There's so much downtime in there. There's so much boredom. And William just made me laugh, and he was super funny. We formed a really good, genuine connection. But for game reasons, it was really good because I was really secure with my blue side of the house, and I had that person on the other side of the house. I was never his number one over Dre, but that was fine. He still passed me information. And then obviously that week when I was up against Bruno, he saved me with the secret power of veto. Would William have used the – remember, he won in the 100 minutes of heaven, the counting competition. Would he have used the real veto if he didn't have the secret power veto? He claims that he would have. It's too bad we didn't get to see that in action. It would have been sexy if William would have used the secret power on me and then put the real veto around Bruno's neck. That would have been a super sexy
play. I was advocating
play,
for that all week. I was like, this is what he should be doing. Yeah. And I really do think that was the best move for his game. I mean, obviously, he goes out pretty soon after that. I think that wouldn't have happened if Bruno was still in the house.
Right. No, I recall we were talking about it, and it's like it's the old half measure, right? Like if you're going to make the move to save Kevin, you go all the way or you don't make it. But yeah, what he did was kind of the 50% move there.
Yeah.
And so how has William been since the show? Are you guys still on good terms? Did he feel like that? Because there was a lot of times when you were saying in the diary room, look, William is a nice guy, but this is a game move for me. I'm not really considering his feelings. Was there any sort of animosity after he got to watch those clips?
No, I got a lot of hate after the show and during the show for the William relationship. People saw me kind of as a game butt and that I was using this young guy's emotions to put myself farther in the game. But that's what Big Brother is about. You form relationships with other people and then use those relationships to progress yourself. Like, I didn't understand. I don't think I did anything malicious at all, or I never tried to, you know, make him a huge fool with this relationship. We're on great terms. He came out of the house and he's like, why are people so upset for me? That's what he said. He didn't understand why people in the community were upset for him, because he was going to use my relationship to further him. It was the same back and forth. And so, I mean, we're great. We text all the time. We Snapchat. There was no animosity at all. And I thought he was hilarious. I can't wait to watch how he was on the show.
I think that's one of the things that, like, in terms of the edit, they really did portray. It was weird because you usually get like a very good edit, and I do think that you did get a good edit in this season. Like, I think one of the moments was when William was trying to trick you into using the veto, and then, you know, Aika eventually tells you this is a trap. They're going to nominate Bruno. They didn't show that Aika told you that. They just showed you being like, I have a bad feeling about this. I'm not going to do it. Like.
Oh, that's kind of
right.
Cool, yeah.
but they also showed you in a really like weirdly negative light with William, where it seemed like from the edit that you were just playing him the whole time, which was really confusing a lot of people, because I know on the feeds you were always talking about like, no, I genuinely like William. But I do think it came off in a different light through the edit.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we certainly got a lot of mileage out of a DR clip of Williams in that moment where he's like, Kevin, I'm going to trick you, you little bitch.
William was a great cast. Yeah, he was a really good cast. No, nothing was malicious at all. I really genuinely like that kid. And like, outside of Netta and Bruno, I mean, he was always in my best considerations, especially when Netta gets knocked off, when Cindy gets knocked off. He was always at my number two, and I really wanted to see him go far. But I mean, I wanted to see myself win more than anyone else. And I think that's what Big Brother is all about. So I didn't really understand the uproar of certain people. William didn't understand it either. It was just like, we were really close friends and we really still like each other.
So in the lead up to when Netta is going to end up going out, the six is going along. It feels like that the six is strong. Did you have any sort of a sense that there was going to be this split coming in the six?
Oh yeah. The six was not going strong for very long. It was, again, this kind of this fight between Netta and Ike was brewing, and you could just see it from with the conversations people were having, and Netta tried to rally Cindy over, but Ike grabbed Cindy. Cindy really loved Ike. Cindy just looked up to Ike and just would have never gone against her at that moment. So yeah, that fight was coming. I didn't think it would happen on day 34 with the double eviction, but it sure did, and it was just crazy to watch. And I mean, that was just like I won the game. You can win a poker tournament, but you can look back and you can play poker hands badly. And like on day 34, when I passively went up to Cindy and said like, don't put up Netta, like you shouldn't do this, but it's your decision. Like I should have just grabbed her and said, don't you dare do this. Like, don't you even think about it. And I think Bruno regrets that as well. Is like, for Cindy to win HOH and for Netta to be the backdoor plan is just a huge detriment on our game that we couldn't stop that. We should have been more aggressive. But during a double eviction, things are so crazy. There's chaos going on. It's really tough to kick it into the high gear and take action when you need to.
But when you knew that the six was going the wrong way, did you and Bruno have a contingency plan about what you were planning to potentially do to get out of what was going to be a sinking ship?
Yeah, I mean, our contingency plan was that Netta was going to go ahead of us, and then after Netta was going to leave, that we would have to beast out and that we would have to go crazy. And we tried to foster our relationship with Dylan. That unfortunately didn't work out when I won the brick challenge and didn't use the veto on him. That really, really hurt Dylan, and that relationship could never be spared. And during that time, also selfishly, like I was with Bruno, but during that time, I also was working on my relationship with Ike and Dimitri a lot, so that if Netta went, then Bruno would be the target ahead of me. And I think I was successful. They didn't trust Bruno as much as they trusted me, so I was kind of working things. I mean, I was with Bruno, but at the same time, you're always trying to develop relationships with other people. So our plan was to ride Netta, you know, go with Netta as long as we could. And then if she was taken out, then we would have to kind of beast and go for it.
Yeah, ultimately, I mean, that double is just so so detrimental to your game in so many ways. I mean, not just that you lose your shield in Netta, but, you know, Jackie wins that veto and is looking around like, why is nobody happy for me? Yeah. And it's just, there were so many elements of the social dynamic that got just kind of screwed up by Cindy not knowing what to do once you win that power there.
Yeah, it's really upsetting. And if you can look back at the tiebreaker when we answer those questions, I do believe, I haven't talked to Cindy about the game, but I think Cindy tried to throw the competition. She answered 22 dodgeballs. And
We wondered about that.
What's that?
We did wonder about that.
I think she must have tried to throw it, and then I answered incorrectly. It was just a disaster. If I won the power, it would have been different, but it was really unfortunate. And again, a huge detriment to Bruno and Maya's game that... Oh, Bruno and I mean, there's clips of us laughing about it. We just lack so much control in certain moments, which is unfortunate. Like, think, like, Cindy wins the HOH and Netta goes home. Like, how do we allow that to happen? Next week, Dylan wins the HOH. Dylan's supposed to be our boy. You know, we've been talking to this guy about boxing for a month. We've just been pumping this guy up. We did have a really, really close bond with Dylan. Dylan wins HOH and Cindy goes home. Like, our people were winning HOH and our people were going home. And it was just, it was really unfortunate.
We did find it very amusing that Cindy, with like two disastrous moves, was like the total catastrophe in your game in both Big Brother Canada 3 and Big Brother Canada 5.
I don't know if this came across on the show at all. This is kind of like a little behind the scenes, is when you're sitting in that living room and you're talking to Arissa, often with her microphone, you can see the audience reaction. You can see their faces. You can see them either cheering or booing. And we were aware that Netta was the villain of the season, because Arissa goes, and Netta, your immunity is up this week, and Canada lost it. They started cheering so aggressively, like they wanted her blood. We were super aware of that Netta was the villain based on the crowd reactions. I think it played into Cindy's decision for sure. That, you know, like they need to vacuum seal that house, because we definitely got some information in there based on Canada reacting during the live shows. And I think it was a massive reason why Cindy put Netta up as the back door as well.
Did you guys know that from earlier competitions during the season? Because around the time that Gary was going out of the house, that there was that was like the first time that there was some sort of like a pop when Netta did badly in the challenge. And there was a scene between Netta and Gary where they were discussing, you know, who is the, you know, the bad guy on the season? Like, who is the person that the audience is rooting for?
Yeah, I think that was day 27. That's the HOH that Willie won.
Kevin, you don't have to remember all this stuff anymore. You could throw the sprinkles away now.
I looked at those I looked at those sprinkles for hours and hours. I don't think I can ever forget the days. Oh my God. Anyway, so I think it was the William HOH. And in those booth competitions, whenever people get eliminated, like let's say Alex and I get eliminated together, Canada would cheer or whatever. You can't really tell. But Netta got eliminated as a singular unit and Canada lost it. So Netta answers, Netta, you're eliminated from the competition. Again, Canada, woo, like cheering at Netta's elimination. That's one of the first moments where like, okay, like she is not loved by Canada. And I think look at Cindy. Cindy came off of season 3 and she was kind of a polarized character. She did get some love, but she didn't get a ton of, you know, love in certain moments either. And I think that played into her mindset of that she almost wanted to play with Canada. She wanted to be on the right side with Canada this time. I do think that decision to put up Netta did impact based on Canada's cheers.
How about Netta? Have you been in contact with her since the end of the season? How has she been doing now that she's been able to get away from this season?
She's been really good. I think it hit her hard. And Peely and I got day drunk with her the other day, and we had some good talks. It hit her hard. I mean, she was such a beloved character. In all of your guys' podcasts, Netta's ranked number one to come back, number one strategist ever. She was ranked in such high regards based off her game in season two, and then to come back and kind of get turned into the villain and then get eliminated after her immunity is up. Like, it really did hit her hard, but I think she's doing all right. She's probably going to move to Toronto and do some fashion stuff. And I just, you know, I wish the best for her. We did really get along in that game, and we were very closely aligned. It was kind of hard to see her go out that drastically.
I want to ask you about Aika as well. So how much did you personally underestimate her, if at all, coming into this season? Because I didn't think that the game that she played in the season, I didn't think she had it in her. I remember talking to her in the preseason, and she was basically saying, like, I was like, hey, are you gonna rip up the letters again? She's like, yeah, I'll probably do it. And I was like, okay, that's such a good idea. Maybe, you know, don't be so crazy this time. But she was phenomenal. Did you have a certain impression of her going in that was ended up being different than what she was able to do?
No, I had a similar impression as you. Entertaining character, but lacked in strategical and social ability. And she definitely proved me wrong. I definitely underestimated her. But pretty quickly, we were aware that, like, this girl actually has some major potential. After, like, that double eviction was her coming out party, I was like, wow, Aika got Cindy to backdoor Netta. Like, Cindy won the HOH, Netta leaves. Everyone in the house was like, that was Aika's move. Like, Aika did that. And yeah, she played a fantastic game. Very tough to live with at moments. Again, like, I respect her game a lot, but when you're on Aika's bad side, locked in that environment, credit to Aika, when you're on Aika's good side, when you're with her in the game, you feel like you're her best friend. She looks at you, she makes eye contact. Let's do this, Kevin, let's do this. And there were moments where I was on Aika's side and I just felt like the most loved person in the house ever. But when I'm on your bad side, it was kind of brutal. So yeah, she played an awesome game. But I mean, if you can't win competitions at the end, based on how the Canadian format is set up, you're going to, like, we saw that in Cassandra in season four, amazing game, but you can't win those final competitions.
But I think that that's why you two are so interesting, because I feel like you're almost complete opposites as players, both really great players, but your superpowers are almost exactly identical in terms of that, you know, her strengths are really being able to go in, form these emotional bonds with players, but she can't win anything. You're more likely to win people over with a strategic argument. And then, as we saw in this season, that you're going to be able to rely on your challenge acumen as well. It's just a really interesting dynamic between both you and her.
Oh, yeah. When you're in the lab making a Big Brother player, like, if you're crafting an Aika, it's very different than the recipe that crafts a Kevin. Like, it's totally two different players, and both had success in different ways, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, do you credit Aika with, because a lot of fans were wondering, especially like in the middle of the game there, like, why couldn't, you know, Dre really wants to work with William, Kevin really wants to work with William, why can't Dre and Kevin ever get on the same page? And do you really feel like it was Aika's social work with Dre that really was the big factor there? Or was it just that Dre never really was able to trust you? I mean, what do you think was
It was a little bit of Aika in there doing some work, but no, it was mostly basically between me and Dre. There's nothing in common, no chemistry strategically the entire game. After you're playing 40 days of Big Brother together and you haven't made a single decision together, it's like, it's hard to pick up the pieces. Good players can, and I just didn't have that gear to connect with Dre. Again, I didn't have a connection with Karen, with Dre. There was a lot of people that I just, for some reason, couldn't break down the barrier, and I don't know what it was. So, yeah, Dre and I, I don't really think Aika was involved in that, but Dre and I were never on the same page this season, unfortunately, which is weird because William and I were close. William, again, that's kind of a detriment of William that he could never bridge us together to form a stronger group to work together. It's too bad. I think Dre's hilarious.
Well, something I think we kind of noted along as the season went was that for whatever reason, anybody that was really mean to you, like, you were the nicest to them. Like, you really went out of your way to be as nice and honest as possible with the people that were, like, really coming at you. And we, like, I found that particularly very interesting because, like, I think I understood where you were coming from in terms of, like, when you're playing Big Brother, you know, you don't want to be like, oh, well, this person doesn't like me, therefore I can't work with them. I think you really went out of your way to try to work with them, but it often kind of backfired where like they were like, why is Kevin not mad at me? Why is he being so sketchy? I think it really kind of, impacted the way that people saw you and maybe was one of the limiting factors in terms of being able to make those social bonds. Like, what do you think about that? Do you think
that's bang on? Is like when someone was, went against me in the game or personal or whatever, I would go to them and just say, and be overly nice, you know, cause I never had to do that with Bruno. I never had to be overly nice to Bruno. We were just with each other the entire time, but with Aika, with Karen, with Dre, whenever we weren't again, I would go to them and be honest and try to be vulnerable and stuff. And it often did backfire. Like, this is very strange. And, you know, people were expecting when Ike is yelling me at the final five, like, your game can't stand up to mine. I'm sitting there just dipping my teabag. Like, that's how I react to conflict in my real life. I just don't give it back. I'm just not a conflict person. And yeah, it's kind of like, you know, remember Adam Klein, like he would blind someone, go up and give him those hard truths. I tried to emulate a little bit of Adam Klein strategy. It's like, yeah, I voted against you, but this is why. Let's please work together in the future. And I was just playing a different game than a lot of people were in there.
I thought that was a really good, that Taron had really, nailed that during, the season. I thought that was a really interesting way that you, one of the reasons why it seemed like at times it was a struggle for people like, to have a lot of trust in you where, it was sometimes like the people that were your allies who would get burned, but you'd be trying to reach out and form bonds with people who you had had disagreements with, but they felt uncomfortable with you because, of the past stuff. And then the people outside of Bruno who you had been working with and had productive relationships with also ended up feeling like there was some mistrust.
Yeah, absolutely. Like with Dylan, and Dylan and Emily were on the block. I won the veto at the brick challenge. Whether I should have thrown that veto or not was something I debated for a long time. And then I didn't use the veto because Bruno was going to be at the back door. Like, that burnt that relationship. Dylan, Emily, and I were so good for so long, and it was just so unfortunate. And then, yeah, there's always instances people could look back on where I did shady things. And to be honest, I mean, I was shady. I would go lie and create alliances and stuff, and people just couldn't trust me in a lot of moments. But thank goodness for those end comp wins.
Yeah, conversely, I think this hurt you in the house, but I think it was one of the bigger, I mean, obviously you're up next to Karen in the end, but I think it was one of the bigger factors in terms of being able to get a unanimous jury vote was that you were nice to the people that didn't like you. And so they didn't have anything that they could use to say, well, Kevin is the worst, other than Karen, obviously. Nobody could say Kevin is the worst. We hate him. We would never vote
people
for him.
People use the word social game, and it's a very broad thing. Like, I don't really understand what is this. Like, I was very nice to people, and it definitely played into the 9-0 jury vote at the end. I was always nice to people. Whether social game means that you can't work people strategically or you're just nice to them, I'm not sure, but you're right. I was always nice to people. I never slandered people. And Big Brother people often very talk, you know, shit about each other in different rooms behind closed doors. I never really engaged in that very much. That's just kind of who I am in the real world as well.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that I admire about you is that while, you know, you will make just about any move to any person in the game, that there's not a mean-spiritedness about it where it's not coming from a place of that you hate somebody. It's just that you are trying to make that game move. And, you know, it doesn't matter if somebody's your friend, you know, you may screw somebody over. But I always like that you've taken the higher road in terms of never like going after the personal attacks with people.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate that. I mean, like, Aika played an awesome game, but in terms of, like, if you were against her in the game, she would attack you on a personal level. Like, she would go after your edges or whatever. I never did that. Like, let's go against each other in a game perspective, but let's not attack the personal
but
stuff.
But as a TV viewer, I like that also. I'm just saying that, you know.
I was going to say, it's a good thing she never found Kevin's study guide.
I think they would always mess with my sprinkle because at the end during that final 2 weeks I was just open with him, just like I just kind of left it out.
But right.
On another note, interesting, Rob, Bruno and I had a talk after the show and we discussed if we went farther in the game together, what would have happened. Bruno says he would have taken me to the end and trying to beat me in the final two. I openly admitted, I was like, Bruno, I was going to cut you at the final five, final four, because you're too good of a mental competitor. Like, you're one person that could have gave me a run for the money in the mental competitions. So I would have cut Bruno. Again, not in a mean-spirited way at all, but
Yeah, so that's something I think a lot of – like that's definitely, you know, leads to a question I want to know, and I know I've seen a lot of people ask is like, you know, it wasn't – you know, the timing obviously doesn't work out well for you when Netta goes at the double eviction there. But if Netta doesn't go there, at some point, like that is kind of a big obstacle. Like if the six manages to survive, like how do you get rid of Netta yourself if somebody doesn't, you know, remove that giant peg from the board for you?
You're right. If Netta survives, eventually the triangle of Netta, Kevin, Bruno would have had to turn after each other. And how that would have went, we'll never see. But again, as the game gets deeper, those mental competitions become more important. And while Netta is a good mental competitor, I was more scared of Bruno at the final five, final four than Netta. So yeah, it would have been interesting. Wouldn't Bruno and I have taken a shot at Netta? Not for a while, not till final seven, final six. We had to go after Dre first. We had to go after, you know, potentially William first. There was other people on the list. Karen, like Netta was too close of an ally to me at that moment to consider it. But the war would have happened. That would have been interesting. But I think the Ika versus Netta war turned out to be better television anyway. Like the Kevin Bruno Netta war wouldn't have been as interesting.
Would have been a little bit more of like a political type drama as opposed to like a knockdown drag out fight. Yeah.
House of Cards versus Game of Thrones. Yeah.
I mean, again, credit to Ika. Look at season two of Big Brother Canada and season five. She's kind of one of the main common denominators. That lady makes great television. She does. While it's hard to live with sometimes, she makes an amazing show. Yeah.
The rivalry that you ended up having with Dimitri, I thought was really, really fun to watch how that played out, where you guys went back and forth. I don't think we've really had anything like that before on Big Brother. I mean, how much pressure was there knowing that you were going to be facing Dimitri in all these competitions coming down the stretch with your game on the line?
Oh, yeah. Every single time I went out there and I had to beat Dimitri. It was like a month since anyone else won a competition besides me and Dimitri. We just traded back and forth. When I was sitting out of the HOH, he won. Like, he was an absolute fantastic competitor. And it's crazy that it came down to me and him in that final trivia game as well with the A and Bs. Like, I don't know. It was just wild. We just threw shots at each other the entire season. He won HOH. I would win Veto to save myself. I would win HOH. He would win Veto. Back and forth, back and forth. And it's kind of cool that it did come to that final part three of the HOH to finally decide the decision. But you're right. Going out and playing in every competition, my biggest worry was Dimitri every single time.
In terms of that final competition, though, knowing that it was going to be trivia, and with all due respect to Dimitri, who was great in so many different competitions, that's really your forte. I mean, you had to have known going in that you had a big leg up on him in that competition. Did you feel really confident heading to that third part?
Yes, but at the same time, it's 50-50. There is some variance. I definitely felt like I had the edge, maybe like I was going to win that 70% of the time, 75% of the time. I don't know. I definitely felt like there is an edge. It was funny. So you know how that – this is like a little behind the scenes that I thought was hilarious. So I studied every second of free time I got. I feel like I've studied more than – I truly kind of just took studying to an obsessive level like no one ever has, potentially. So we go out into that backyard. We're doing rehearsal for the part three of the HOH. We're each standing in front of our buzzers. Production comes on and says, "All right, guys, you're going to be answering questions about the jury." And instantly my mind flips to the U.S. version. How they, you know how they answer those jury questions, like the jury members say A or B, and that's more of a flip. That's just random stuff. So instantly I panic. I'm just like, no, I studied for weeks. My edge is gone, right? Now it's a flip situation. But then during the real thing, we go out there and I realize it was trivia questions about the jury. And so then I was like, okay, thank God it's actually trivia. So that was a little cool behind the scenes that I thought was pretty funny. But you're right. So we're answering there as soon as I buzz in and he answers incorrectly, like a 1-point lead in that game is really tough to come back from. And then I was, as soon as it was game over after I got that lead.
Yeah, we saw you, you're the person you had left in charge of your social media released the video of you showing the big list of competitions, like every single competition that Big Brother Canada's ever had, like right around the end of the game, which actually, you know, they said that it was, you know, it was really late and they didn't mean for it to be so late, but it was actually kind of perfect timing because it was right after this huge competition streak, like right before you're about to finish it off. So I mean, this was a level of preparedness that I think we've never seen before. And I think I said on the finale podcast that like you essentially solved the game of Big Brother Canada. Can you tell us about this preparation and every everything that went into this the competition?
Yeah, it was very key, my preparation. Like, I struggled strategically and socially at moments, but in terms of pregame prep, mid-game studying, and dominating those mental, I don't think anyone's ever competed in those mental challenges like I have. Like, I really nailed those out of the park. And kind of like, I'll call my game how it is, but I got to give myself props when it comes to those mental competitions. So 2 weeks before the show starts, I get the phone call. You want to come play Big Brother Canada? As soon as I get that phone call, in the matter of minutes, I texted my friend and said, can you help me? Her name is Sue. She lives in Australia. She kind of helps me out with my media and stuff. I said, please go through every single season of Big Brother Canada. Take screenshots of the competition. Write down what happened, how many people played, what the winner's strategy was. So I had this booklet. I called it the Big Brother Bible of every single competition in Big Brother Canada history. And before the game, I went through every single competition, analyzed it, said, if this competition is this day, I will do this. And I had an optimized strategy for every single challenge. So I knew at the final five, final four, every single competition in Big Brother Canada history, it all revolves around mental. What day did this happen on? How many times did this person was on slop? You know, I just knew how important it was. So in that final five, while the other four are, you know, just hanging out, talking, whatever, I'm in my room studying my sprinkle guide, because I just, like, I did, at one point production called me into the diary room. They're like, Kevin, you have to go have conversations. Like, we're making a show here. Like, stop looking at your sprinkles. But I told them, Big Brother, like, I've seen the game. It doesn't matter. I have to win the final four veto. I have to win the final HOH. I just need to know my days, and I'm going to win this game. And so in a way, I kind of did break that end game where, like, by me being antisocial and looking at my sprinkles, I won the game. It's weird. And Rob, I don't know if you remember, I did a podcast with you during season four of Big Brother Canada where I talked about this. It was when Joel went out of the final five. I said, the end format to Big Brother Canada is broken and someone can beat it. I talked about this with you and I said, like, it relies too heavily on mental competitions. So for me, I got to go back and find that clip.
We'll go back and look for that clip.
We talked about this. So for me to go back and beat those end competitions, it was kind of hilarious.
Well, do you feel like if Big Brother Canada does come back, that they should probably change up the competition?
Well, I think that this is what happened.
Game?
I think, like, they put it on hiatus to figure out until they said, hey, you figure out how to fix this game. Kevin Martin broke it. That slithering snake broke the game. You guys figure this out.
Yeah, another funny moment is, so those final trivia questions, right? I went 5 for 5. I didn't miss one. Dimitri, I think, went 2 for 5. So we didn't even hear the last two questions. During the rap party, Trevor Boris, the production guy who does it, he pulls me over. We're both loaded drunk. He's like, Kevin, come here. He pulls out his phone. He has the backup questions, the questions that didn't make the final cut to go to the show. He starts rifling them off, and I'm loaded. I answered every single one. We nailed them. All of the 15, 16 questions that they made for the show, we got everyone right, so... Yeah, that final three, it wasn't going to... Well, I just, like, if Dimitri wins, he's going to cut me, right? And third place is $0. If I win, I get to take care and I win the game. $100,000 plus a sick car plus the equity of, you know, what you can do after the show as the winner of Big Brother Canada. I'm like, that final trivia game is a $200,000 trivia game. Literally, the difference between third and first is like $200,000. So, of course, I'm just going to sit in my room and study the days every single second I got. It's like the biggest moment of my life. I had to execute. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I imagine you probably heard this, but Trevor, I did see that Trevor, you know, at the finale said something about the fact that, you know, production knew that if, you know, whatever Kevin said was right, like, we would check our notes before we would double check Kevin's information, because we trusted him more than we trusted our own research.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. How much of those early competitions did you throw, if any?
A lot of them. A lot of them were, again, I don't know what if it was shown on the show. So when Netta won that HOH, it was me, Gary, and Netta in the tiebreaker. So it was a mental competition. I was answering the questions correctly. And then after Dre went out, she was the last one I worried about. I intentionally threw the tiebreaker question. I answered over. That was like day 14 or whatever. I don't remember. There was one moment that was really upset about the edit. You guys remember when I won HOH and I put Ike and Dimitri on the block and the veto is the Toyota 86. You guys remember that competition with the green signs and stuff? I threw that competition, but they edited it to make it show like I lost, which really kind of hurt me and I didn't make the show. So I answered all the, I did the game as fast as I could. I did the signs, I did the puzzle, And then they're like, buzzing, buzzing, you're done. And I said, no. And I went and sat in the car for 5 minutes, played with the windows, played with the windshield wipers. And then I went and buzzed in. I didn't want Dimitri or Ika to leave that week. I felt like I was too big of a solo threat if one of them left.
You know, we haven't talked much about the triple eviction. We talked about it in our exit interview. And then you mentioned you watched the YouTube video of it. But could you just talk through the actual process of realizing that that was going to be something that you were going to be faced with? And then ultimately going up on the block when you thought you were safe?
Yeah, with all my prep about like twists and competitions and stuff, I really never thought that they would do a triple eviction ever again. So for me to be outgoing HOH into the triple eviction, and I just, it was literally deja vu. Season three, I had my stuff pick HOH. I put him in the box. I said, all right, hopefully we'll see you next week. I go out in the triple eviction. Same thing. I put my stuff pick. I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe they're doing a triple eviction. So I put in a lot of work that week that if it was a double eviction, I could potentially survive and that Drain, you know, someone else would. But as soon as they announce it's a triple and I can't play, I say I have one shot in the veto to win. Yeah. And I don't know if they – so in that competition, you can see that I run to my ball pit and I gather up all my blocks first. Guys, if you ever go on Big Brother, to anyone who's listening, this is the strategy. Season 3, I lost the triple eviction veto because Bruno beat me with a strategy. He went, he gathered up all his objects, then he did laps. So don't go jump in the ball pit, grab one thing, run out, jump in the ball pit. Jump in the ball pit once, get all the necessary pieces, then run laps. And yeah, so to like the win is amazing. But for me to win my veto and save myself during the triple eviction, just for myself, like I feel like my story arc was done after that competition. Like it was just such a euphoric moment.
You don't end up with a clown shoe in the corner that way, right?
You're right. Exactly. And then 2 hours after that, I won the final five HOH. With the drunken speeches, the number guessing game. So in the matter of 3 hours, I went from the final eight to the final four. It was like the craziest day. I survived the triple and then won my immunity. It was just insane to go from the final eight to the final four. So after that catastrophe happened, I was like, I could maybe win this game.
Okay. I want to start to bring in, we have a lot of questions for you from the listeners that we got ahead of time. And then also questions are coming in now. Hashtag RHAP. And please, Alex and Taryn, continue to jump in with anything else that you guys have. This is from Yamir BB on Twitter. What was the hardest decision you made while you were playing, Kevin?
The hardest decision I made was probably the hardest decision was when William was HOH and he put Dylan and Emily on the block and I won the veto in that brick competition. We came up with this plan to backdoor Jackie, but all along that Bruno was during that decision, I didn't know whether to use it or not. I don't know what they showed on the show, but I was in actual turmoil in the dive room and then the bridge. I was like, I actually didn't know what to do. And thankfully, I made the right decision by not using it. But that was the hardest decision, the most agonizing.
Okay.
I've got a question for you. And I think, you know, this is probably somewhere in the notes too, Rob. I think this is something I've seen a couple people asking. Obviously, like, you know, everyone knows you're playing poker pretty much every day. You're doing your Twitch streams and stuff like that. And, you know, playing poker at pretty high stakes, like there's some high pressure moments there. And certainly I think one of the things that was most impressive, not just that you won so many competitions down the stretch, but that they were all these must win moments where, you know, it's win or go home and you pulled it through again. Like, how do you is like the clutch gene? Do you think that's something you can't really teach? Or is that like something you've developed by playing at a high level in poker? Like, what do you really attribute that success to? Because you can know everything and still in the moment, I mean, we've seen plenty of people, you know, panic just because of the gravity of the situation.
You're right. I mean, playing poker for decent amounts of money at certain moments must have trained me just to turn the emotion off and just to get the job done. I don't know if there's a clutch gene, but I do think there's a preparation gene. And I was more prepared for mental competitions than the house than anybody else. I knew every day. I knew everything. So just it calmed my mind. And just like as for professional poker players, it's mostly preparation. Yes, in game, you have to keep calm. You have to make decisions. The winning in professional poker comes away from the table when you're doing the studying. And I felt like it, same thing for me in the Big Brother house. Me studying that HOH room and just being prepared for those mental competitions. So yeah, I don't think I have a clutch gene. I think I have a preparation gene.
This is a question on that same subject from Matt Holtzclaw, who wants to ask you, between your success and Vanessa Rousseau's relative dominance, have you guys ruined the future of poker players on Big Brother? I know Matt's a poker player himself. Does any poker player have a chance anymore, Kevin?
There's definitely going to be a stigma around you, but there's a stigma anyway. Going into season three, I lied about my profession because to the common person in the world, poker, you think about bluffing, you think about their sunglasses, you think about, oh, this person's shady. I had a conversation with a couple days into the game. Gary comes up to me and says, why do you do a shady job? I'm like, wait, poker's not shady. It's a very calculated, disciplined game that you can optimize and dominate. So there's already a negative stigma, but after I won and then Vanessa, but look back in Survivor, like, poker players never did well. Anna Kate was pre-merged. She was a poker player. Jean Robert from Survivor China, he did terrible. And Garrett was pre-merged.
That's Survivor, so, I mean, though, not Big Brother.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Okay, Big Brother, yeah, you're going to have a stigma with poker players, but it's cool. Whenever a poker player is on reality television, I always cheer for them just based off of that. And so it's cool to finally win the show as a poker player for sure.
Yeah, I think we nailed it. You know, Garrett's on Survivor talking about, like, all I need is I need to be able to have a bowl of chicken and be able to have, like, the things I'm used to at the poker table. So I think maybe that's a factor. I think the poker player is really built for Big Brother and not for Survivor.
You're right.
Maybe
as long as we're in the house, we're good, for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah.
Kevin, this is a question from AMS06 on Twitter. Has social media reshaped the game? It seems players are more interested in followers than winning the game. Were you worried about your image? It's something that we talk about constantly on the podcast of the role that all of the social media plays in these shows that we watch, whether it's doing things to gain a social media audience or the role social media plays, particularly on Big Brother. And yeah, somebody who has gone through it so recently, do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, absolutely. From my own perspective, going into season three, I wanted to be a star. I wanted to make sexy television, and like I wanted to get the camera time. And so I did a lot of antics. I was myself. I just turned my personality up. This time, I was less concerned about TV time. It's still nice to be on show. It's still nice to be like a feature character, of course. But I was more concerned about the game this time. This time was more business oriented. It'd be interesting if we played Big Brother in a vacuum environment. Let's say there's no cameras at all. There's no television audience. Let's just say you're going to play Big Brother. People definitely would act differently, for sure. Yeah, a lot of people want to pan to the cameras and stuff. And hopefully with the Big Brother 19 cast, there's some interesting people in there. But you're right. Seeing the, you know, the Instagram models on Big Brother trying to get their followers up, it's nice to see the game moments and to see the game.
How would the game be different? Would it be more cutthroat because you wouldn't be worried about what people were going to say on social media?
Yes. Yeah. You didn't have to watch your language. You didn't have to. It would be way more cutthroat. You could be a villain. People are always scared about being the villain. Like, I was terrified about being the villain. Other people don't want to be the villain. It takes a rare person. I love on reality TV when someone can be the villain and own it. And I'm like, yes, I always cheer for the villain. But you're right. If there's no cameras, it would be way more cutthroat. The things people would say would be way more vile.
I do think that the key to being able to own that is in the diary room, where you're able to have that relationship with the audience and be able to, describe, you know, exactly what you're able to do. I think that, Kevin, that's something that you've done well in sort of like fostering a relationship with the audience in your diary room along the way in your seasons, where Taryn and I just finished writing or working on our audiobook. We went back and watched Big Brother 2, and really nice. Will Kirby, we, you know, give so much credit to as being like the ultimate person to be able to go into the diary room and have that relationship one-on-one with the audience, where he could do terrible things in the house, but you still felt like he was your friend.
Yeah, for sure. The diary, like when you go in the diary room, you can't take it off. The diary room is one of the more key parts of the game, and I was super aware of that all the time. So I hope I formed that audience. Again, I haven't seen any of my diary rooms, so it'll be interesting to see what they showed. But at the same time, I was super aware that the first half of the game, I was a minor character, almost invisible on the show. Based on how often people get called to the diary room, their line of questioning, production saying, hey, da-da-da-da-da. Like, the first half of the game, I didn't win a competition. I was never nominated, so I didn't get a lot of screen time. But I was fine with that. That proves that I was kind of playing an under-the-radar game. But you nailed it, Rob. Having that relationship with the audience, especially in the Canadian version where twists often happen, is very important.
Colleen has a question, wants to know, did it help or hinder your game when William left the house? I did feel like that was a big help to you in terms of, and maybe it's a little bit of looking at it from a different point of view, that William went out in the triple eviction also, because it really in some ways sort of that you weren't a pair anymore. And while, yeah, it would have been another number on your side, it was able to sort of like, you had to, you know, you had a singular focus of what you had to do at that point rather than try to make it work with a pair of you and William.
You're right. I think it was a good moment, which sucks because I really like William, but him leaving definitely was kind of like a fresh start. It gave me more time to, again, study more and get in the right mindset. And because, yeah, when I spent so much time with William, it probably took away from my other relationships. But I agree, especially in the triple eviction. So William wasn't on the block. There wasn't that process of campaigning and stuff. It was just clean. It was cut. And I had a fresh start at the final five. So absolutely, it definitely helped my game. But it was sad to see him go.
Edmo wants to know, if Ika and Dimitri were in the final two, who would you have voted for?
At the time, without seeing or hearing anything, in the moment, I know I would have voted for Ika. Okay. So if I get third place, I sweep away to the final stage, vote for Ika or Dimitri, I would have voted for Ika over Dimitri. I her impressive dominance of the social game and being able to make people do whatever she wanted at certain moments was just more impressive. Like, the comp wins is important, especially coming from a huge comp winner. Like, I mean, but what's more impressive, Dimitri knocking down bowling balls and throwing beanbags in a circle, or Ika actually controlling the social manipulation of the game? For me, it's Ika.
And do you think Ika wins?
No. No, Ika rubbed too many people the wrong way. She wasn't going to get the Jackie vote. She wasn't going to get the Netta vote. Mm. So Ika, while dominating moments in the game, her general, how she sent people off to jury in a really negative way. Her goodbye messages, everything was negative. No, Ika probably wasn't going to win in a lot of situations.
She'd lose to Dimitri.
Yes, Dimitri would have won, I believe.
Okay. Big Brother Ant in the chat room says, do you think... please be honest that the jury was bitter. Was this a bitter jury? I talked to Karen the day after the finale. She said, yes, this was a bitter jury, that they were bitter. Do you feel like that this was in any way a bitter jury?
I mean, again, such a general term. I mean, we would have seen if it was like Ika versus Dimitri, Ika versus Karen. If they would have flipped the vote and given Karen the win over Ika, that would have been the definition of a bitter jury for sure. But me versus Karen, there's no proof. Like, I played a better game than Karen, you know. I don't think it was as bitter.
And not to take anything away from Karen.
Yeah,
but
not at all. Not at all.
I mean, I think that, like, depending on whatever metric you want to take a look at, I guess that you were nominated more times than she was, I guess. I mean, if you're going to, like, try to take a look at this, like, analytically, I feel like the, you know, history is on your side.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, not to take anything away for Karen. She definitely did some cool things in there. What was the point I was going to make? There was one thing that is slipping my mind here. Anyway, sorry, it's gone.
That's okay. I have a voicemail question for you from one of our listeners. This is one of our listeners, Jeff, has a question for you.
Would you rather fight a giant mosquito one time and get your ass whipped by it? Or would you like the relationship that you have and never get bit again? Or do you like the relationship that you have with mosquitoes right now?
Well, what would your answer to that question be?
Is that Jeff from American? From the American U.S.?
Yeah. Hey, don't dodge the question, Kevin. Would you rather get your ass beat by a giant mosquito, or would you rather keep the relationship you currently have with mosquitoes?
What is that clip from? Where is that? That can't be a real question.
Oh, it's a real question.
I would get my ass beat by a giant mosquito, I guess.
New house guest icebreaker.
What was that atrocity?
It's the pregame interviews for Big Brother.
Jeff Acid.
Yeah, Jeff is really reinventing the way the pregame interview
Jeff's
is.
Jeff's never been like the most standout interviewer ever, has he?
No, he's breaking new ground. He's
I disagree. I think Jeff is the most standout interviewer with questions like these. Yeah.
Well, while we're on this subject, Kevin, do you have any thoughts on the cast that just came out?
Glanced over it. It's interesting. I like that the average age is up. Like, they got a couple more more interesting people. It's a very diverse cast. And, you know, I don't think I'm going to be watching every episode so closely, but I always follow on Reddit Big Brother. I'm always – every day I'm on Reddit Big Brother, and I get the theme of the story. So it's going to be interesting. I like all new cast, older average age. It could be, like, you know, a legendary season in the making.
Okay, a question from Mr. Robot Taryn wants to know that Cindy denies that Brevin fought for Netta to stay, but we saw otherwise. Arissa tweeted they had the receipts From Kev's perspective, what happened in the double eviction? So when we saw on the show in the jury segment, when Bruno got to the jury house, Cindy was really upset with Bruno because Bruno did not, that she felt like that if it wasn't for you guys, then she wouldn't have put up Netta
on
the block.
She really blamed putting Netta up on me and Bruno.
yes.
No way. Like that kid. Oh, what? I mean, so Cindy makes a big move. She should first of all, just own it instead of passing off the blame. But if you're going to pass off the blame to other people, pass it off to the correct people. Like Bruno and I were the only two people who even said anything against putting Netta up. So Cindy's upstairs. Production's saying, come downstairs. I run upstairs. I say, like, what are you going to do? I very passively say, like, this isn't a good idea. Like, do something else. That's your decision. Yeah. Way too passive by me. Then Bruno comes running up the stairs and I say, Bruno, talk to her. And Bruno's way more aggressive, says, like, don't do this. Bruno was the more outspoken of the two. But again, we both should have been more aggressive for sure. But yeah, I was shocked that, because it's on tape. Like, how can you deny that?
Right? We don't know.
it's an unknown mystery.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you'll enjoy that when you get up to that part. Gregory McBean wants to ask you, did you take anything from Sarah Hanlon's game and use it in your winning season? We talk all the time with returning players that often we identify something that a returning player brought back into their season, in their second season, from the person that won. We saw it most recently with Sarah Lucina in Survivor Game Changers. Was there anything from Sarah Hanlon that she did that you felt like that you were going to try to incorporate into your game this time?
Yeah, Sarah was, I think, one of the best social players ever in Big Brother Canada. Her relationships across the board were just so amazing. And even post-game show, everyone loves Sarah Hanlon. She's incredible. I definitely tried. I definitely failed with some relationships for sure. Mm. But that's an interesting thing that when returning players come back, they often try to emulate. That is an interesting theory, Matt. I like Survivor Game Changers. The community is not really big on it. Anyway, it's a side note. I could talk about Survivor all day. I tried to emulate what Sarah did a lot of the times with relationships. She was always super kind, but she did confront people when she needed to. I think Sarah's a very underrated winner. I know, Taryn, you're not big on the Sarah Hanlon game, but I respectfully disagree.
The one area that he's wrong on, Kevin, please forgive him.
Please forgive him.
Do you know what's an also interesting theory is, like, if returning players come from the same season, do they work together? And often the answer is yes, like Sarah and Tony and Survivor. Me and Bruno didn't get along in season three, but it's just like the devil you know in the Big Brother house is better than the devil you don't know. Like, we instantly knew each other were going to work together.
I knew the devil in the Big Brother house, and it was Kevin.
Oh, Karen Singbeal.
Kenneth wants to know, Kenneth Jackson, do you still talk to Karen? Do you guys have a relationship?
Yeah, we send snaps and texts all over the place. Yeah, she's out at the shoe swap living in her nice cabin. It's good. Yeah, we're snapping all the time. She's fun.
Yeah,
getting
the occasional snake emoji.
Yeah, I just want to say that whether you're against each other, getting to the final five, final four, final three is so difficult that even if you are enemies with the other person, there is a unique form of bonding that does happen. You know, going to the Big Brother Canada Awards at the final four, doing the final three, it's even though you're against each other, getting that deep in a very difficult game does bond people together. And I did experience that with Karen and Ike, even though we were against each other for a majority of the season. Dimitri and I were always chill with each other. You know, we're cool.
Okay.
Yeah, I was saying during the season that I felt like your relationship with Karen was going to be like Dan's relationship with Jerry in season 10, and that, like, someday Karen will be at your wedding and it'll be great.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, for sure. She invited me out to her cabin. I got to go, you know, wakeboarding with her or something.
Wakeboarding, wow. I love Karen also. I think that she was so funny on the season.
Oh, so funny.
Yeah. I really think that this was a very fun group that got to the end on this season, and all of you guys brought something to the table.
Yeah, the final four between D'Amica and Karen and myself was definitely a unique group. It's kind of, I was very proud of, you know, how the season turned out, and I think people were really high on it, which is really nice. It was cool to be a part of.
Okay. This is from Sober Hyena on Twitter. Kevin, how does it feel to be one of the only two people besides Dan Gieseling to win Big Brother unanimously?
Yeah, the unanimous vote was very, very cool. I wasn't too worried about a legacy or anything. I just kind of wanted to win. But to get 9-0 was huge. I didn't think I would get Dylan's vote. I thought it would maybe be a 7-2, 8-1. But credit to Dylan. Thank you very much for the vote and the 9-0. It shows that he was a really good sport about it. So, yeah, 9-0 is pretty sexy sweet.
Okay. Mr. Robot Taryn wants to know, was the Peasants Alliance real for you? Why did you throw out Jackie's name to DeMica? She exposed the alliance to DeMica after.
Yeah, so in that moment, it was final nine. Bruno and I went through our list of people about potentially people we could work with. Ike and Dimitri, not happening. Karen, not happening. Dylan, not. Like, we went through the list of people, and it was just no, 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 no. And the last name we mentioned, Jackie. Do you know what? We could maybe work with Jackie. So we went and made an alliance. If Jackie, Dimitri, or if the three of us, Jackie, Bruno, or myself, won power, we could have maybe stayed together. But as soon as the other group wins power, we have to throw Jackie under the bus. I feel like, you know, and there's different sections of the house, and our section didn't win power. So they are going to attack our section. So then it's like, all right, we have to make sure it isn't me or Bruno. And we tried something with Jackie. It didn't work because Bruno and I got on the block. It would have been crazy to put anyone else but me and Bruno on the block. So, yeah, I mean, it was real for convenience. And as soon as it wasn't convenient, I was out. And that's how I worked in the Big Brother house. I know it's super shady. I had no loyalty to anybody. I will be with you for convenience. And then as soon as it's not convenient for my game, I'm just going to leave.
Right. Well, that's the idea, right, behind bringing in someone like a Jackie, is that it gives someone who's targeting you and your group another place to go. It gives you something to sell as opposed to a nothing that you
yes,
had before.
Yes, absolutely. It was a weak pitch, but we had to try.
Yeah.
And it's weird, too, because people found you so, like, such a mystery, an enigma. They couldn't predict what you were doing. But I think that, like, in a lot of ways, you can be a very reliably predictable player yes. because you will always do what's you in what you perceive as your own best interest, whereas, you know, somebody like Karen, that is absolutely not the case. Yeah. So people just weren't able to see that in the house. They couldn't see that, like, that's what you cared about. They really just couldn't understand you.
Yeah, I was a giant mystery to a lot of people, which, again, it's like not a good trait to have. You want to be very open. You want to be your perception of you as a player. You want to be open, honest, straight to the point. I was kind of an enigma. I was a mystery, which is really upsetting. I couldn't change that perception. But you're right, Taryn. I'm very predictable in the sense that I'm always going to make the best decision for me.
Okay.
Always.
Edwin Johnson wants to know, how do you like your new blank from the brick? Have you gone and visited Mike Bell yet, Kevin?
Oh my God, Mike Bell. It was funny. So I actually went to production and I was dead serious. I was like, if we ever have a family visit, like, can you send Mike Bell in for me? I thought that would have been a hilarious scene. Mike Bell walks in the front door. I
Kevin
cry in
Martin.
His arms. Like, and I was like, if I win HOH, like, get the video message from Mike Bell. Forget my mom. Forget Peely. Like, I would love to see them. I want to hear from Mike Bell. They didn't think it was as funny as I thought it was. But, oh, yeah. Seeing Mike Bell was like a dream come true. But I haven't gone to the brick. I have a lot of money to the brick. I just talked to my family. I was like, you guys need anything, get anything.
Okay.
I move all over the world, so I don't need furniture.
Okay.
Yeah, I actually do need a new TV. I saw that in the chat of your Twitch stream.
What size do you want, Taryn? Let me write it down here.
Let's go over 60 inches. We'll
add it to the list.
Kevin, you said that you could talk about Survivor for forever. Did you finish watching Survivor Game Changers? Did you get through that?
Yeah, I did. I binged it. And now I'm going back and listening to the Survivor Know-It-Alls. You guys did awesome. I love Steven, as always. I did finish it. Yeah, a lot of people were down on this season. I saw the rankings on Survivor Reddit. But a lot of people were down. I thought it was like an average season, maybe even like slightly above average in my mind. I thought Sarah Lucina was a good winner. I know people didn't like her as a narrator. Sarah definitely played that Tony-esque game. Yo, it was a good season. It was a little bit crazy. The editing in certain moments this season was awful. There was some bad editing from the Survivor.
Like what? What do you say? What do you feel like is bad?
I mean,
editing?
When Michaela went home at the final seven?
Yeah.
It was like, where did that come from? There was no Michaela storyline, and all of a sudden she's gone, like an unfinished character.
Big moves.
And to see Ceri go home at the final six based on a million twists was kind of hard to see as well. Ceri was such a legend. Also, like, I'm not a huge Sandra fan. I've always been lower on the Sandra stock than other people. But, like, seeing her go home and get her torch snuff for the first time did hurt me a little bit. So it was a fun season.
So you came back on Sandra.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She her third appearance, I think, is slightly more impressive than her first two wins in a very weird way. Like, but
yeah, okay. Yeah, people said that. That was a thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I get that. Yeah. that Tara, Alex, do you have any other questions for Kevin today?
I can't think of anything. This is pretty comprehensive.
Yeah.
Where can people find you on Twitch, Kevin?
Twitch. Yeah. I can Google Kevin Martin Twitch Poker. Kevin Martin Twitch Poker. It was funny that my middle name is more popular than, oh my God, like Karen really branded that Kevin Robert Martin, didn't she? Really, really did.
That helped.
Helping you out. Yeah.
Kevin, when you and I first spoke outside of Big Brother, I remember that we spoke right after your season in Big Brother Canada 3. That did I say anything that was helpful at that time, or did I give you more bad advice like I tend to give people?
No, your advice was, you're just like, meh. Like in my mind, when the first time you no, you kind of call me, because in the first time you play a reality TV show, you kind of think it bigger than it is. You know, like, this is life changing. This is my clinical moment in life. Like, this is everything. And I phoned you, Rob, and you're just like, like, you played on a reality TV show. Like, you'll do okay. And I was like, oh, like, that was a lot less than I thought. It was good advice, though. It was like, just like, take it as it goes, you know?
Yeah. Good. Hopefully that set you on the trajectory to where you are now. But in all seriousness, you know, winning Big Brother is great. But I'm really even more proud of what you've been able to do with your poker streaming, because, you know, like there's so much variance that goes into these reality show games, and you know, a bounce of the ball one way or the other. But what you're doing outside the Big Brother house, I know how much hard work that takes to get to where you are now. So. Really, job well done with everything, Kevin.
That's awesome. I really appreciate that. Yeah, and I'm excited to get back and link up with your buddy Jason Somerville,
yes,
Rob.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Gonna go down to the World Series of Poker in a couple weeks here and play a few events and hang out with Jason Somerville and the crew. So yeah, this has been a fun interview. I hope I covered everything.
Yeah. Hopefully I see you in Reno again later this year. Hopefully that we can that'll work out. When we were in Reno last year, it was me and you. We had dinner with Boston Rob and Tyson and Anna Kate. We did credit card roulette. Were you lucky that night, Kevin?
No, didn't I lose? Didn't I have to pay for that bill that night?
Sure.
Yeah. I definitely paid for Rob and Tyson's supper that night in Anna Kate's. So.
It was foreshadowing for the money you were about to win.
Tyson ran around the casino playing slot machines.
Hey, look, you pay for dinner for enough Survivor winners, and then some of that Boston Rob and Tyson karma rubs off on you.
Yeah, absolutely. So Winner's Club.
That was good. Super I think also cool. Anna Kate, her credit card number was that got snapped in people recording that, and then people had to like, hey, your credit card number's on Snapchat right now. Okay.
Right. Yeah, it was a fun night.
All right. Do we have a hashtag for the Kevin Martin interview?
That Kevin Martin.
Okay. Kevin Martin /tag.
As opposed to the other one?
Yes. All right. There you go. All right. Well, great job. Thanks, everybody, who joined us live here today. Kevin, anything else you want to tell people to check out or anything like that?
Yeah, if you guys like poker, even if you're not a poker fan, I try to do a Twitch stream that's pretty pretty chill and pretty enjoyable. So follow me on Twitter or come catch a Twitch stream. I'm going to fire up some tables and get gambling here in a little bit, so I'm excited.
Okay. All right, everybody, thanks for checking this out. Taryn, any word on when the LFC are getting together for the draft?
We're hoping it's Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern.
Okay, tentative Sunday, 4 p.m. Eastern. Be on the lookout for that. Follow Taryn on Twitter, at Taryn Armstrong, or at Armstrong Taryn, and at Alex Kidwell. And, of course, if you want to check out me and Taryn talking 19 hours plus about Dr. Will and Big Brother 2. Kevin, doesn't that seem like something you want to jump right into? 19-hour audiobook from me and Taryn? Talking about old season of Big Brother?
I want to jump into the Steve and Rob like evolution of Survivor. I'm going to go through the old seasons of Survivor, so that's what I'll be doing.
Well, that's not with Steven, though. I know that Steven's your favorite.
Oh,
that's with
Josh
Wigler.
Yeah. Okay, so I'll get into those, but after playing 69 Days of Big Brother, I'm going to take a slight pause from the community and just get away for a little bit. But
all right,
I'll be following along with Big Brother 19.
All right.
Again, you don't have to remember the day count, Kevin.
I'm telling you, it's so ingrained. I'm starting to forget it a little bit, but like. Like, it's no, I mean, I keep telling myself, like, I don't have to, like, Ika's chip being pulled seven times no longer has reference, like, is no longer important in my life, right?
Delete.
But for that time, it was the most important thing for my life for those 3 weeks. But no, it doesn't matter anymore. I don't want to see sprinkles.
You'll be 90
again.
Still talking about that.
You just got to, like, visualize all that as baggage just, and, like, just
exactly.
Drop it. Well, I'm, like, that's the trick.
I'm sure there's still, like, a part of you that's like, well, I might need this someday. Like, I need to retain this. Like, what if you go back and they're like, on Big Brother Canada 5.
No. We're retired. Our short and reality TV career.
Maybe you're a hoarder. Maybe that's what it is. You can't let all that stuff go. Yeah. Information hoarder. Okay. Yeah. And also for our listeners who might be interested in a $25 gift card to restaurant.com, Podcast One has a survey that you could fill out. It should take less than 10 minutes at podcastone.study. Trying to get some more information about the listeners to this podcast. They'll give you a $25 gift card if you're one of the first 250 people to fill out the survey, and you could win an additional $250 Visa card for filling it out. We really appreciate it if you take the time to do it, because it helps match up the right sponsors with this audience. That's at podcastone.study. All right. Thanks so much, everybody, for checking it out. If you missed any of our Big Brother US preview of these last two nights, those are available as well on our iTunes feed, robinswebsite.com/iTunes, or on robinswebsite.com. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.